Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. I usually have a little essay to talk about, but I'd rather kind of share something with our listeners about the Eric B. Etherly Memorial Scholarship honoring a beloved member of Chicago's dance community launched at the Joffrey Academy of Dance. A true Southern gentleman, Eric B. Etherly contributed to Chicago's dance community extensively, passionately, and always with great generosity after making the city his home upon graduating from Northwestern in 2001. He soon graced many stages here, as with the World Dance Theater, Windy City Times, he wrote for, and the popular publicist and ultimately vice president at the Silverman Group, represented the Joffrey Ballet, among other high-profile clientele, until his untimely death in a car accident in his native Tennessee on December 29, 2014, at the age of 35. To honor his memory and continue his legacy here, Eric's partner Jay Leibovitz, joined by Eric's mother Nancy Fallis, have initiated a new scholarship for pre-professional male dancers at the Joffrey Academy of Dance, official school of the Joffrey Ballet. Donations to the Eric B. Etherly Memorial Scholarship Fund will support the tuition for a male student on a professional track at the Academy of Dance to be selected by Joffrey Ballet Artistic Director, our good friend Ashley Weider, with a new recipient to be named annually. Contributions are fully tax deductible, as the Joffrey Ballet is a 501-C3 organization. For more information or to contribute to the Eric Etherly Memorial Scholarship Fund at the Joffrey Academy of Dance, please visit joffrey.org/support or call 312-386-8974. I thank Beth Silverman for getting me this information because Eric was a very dear friend, and anytime we set up a conversation with our good friend Ashley Weider at the Joffrey, which we enjoy doing regularly, Eric was responsible for that. He's a young man who left us all too soon, so in that, we remember him in this scholarship, which has been set up. So again, for information at the Joffrey, call 312-386-8974. One of the fun things about hosting my radio show is having the opportunity of making the acquaintance of some very interesting, talented, and fascinating people. And our first very special guest is just such a person. He's a man who's spoken to us through his words and music for many years. We are all familiar with his work and music because they've become standards that speak to each of us and just simply touch our hearts. Some of his multi-Grammy winning work, like the song The Lonely Bull, his first big hit, A Taste of Honey from his album Whipped Cream, and an album cover we'll always remember, The Mexican Shuffle, What Now My Love, Casino Royale, his seductive and hauntingly touching work Rise, and what many of us consider one of the most beautiful love songs of all time, written by Burt Bacharach and Hal David, This Guy Is in Love with You, are just a small sampling of his music that is a reflection of his passionate instrumental storytelling. A man whose distinctive musical virtuosity not only sets the standard but defines the essence of excellence in music and song. Herb Alpert, gifted instrumentalist, talented composer, charismatic performer, record producer, visual artist, sculptor, and philanthropist, a true Renaissance man. Eight-time Grammy Award-winning jazz icon Herb Alpert and his wife, the internationally renowned Grammy Award-winning singer Lanny Hall, returned to Chicago at the Mackinac Arts Center, Saturday, October 15th at 7:30. This concert comes hot on the heels of the September 30th release of Herb's newest album, Human Nature, that finds the iconic musician delving into dance grooves and elements of electronic music in a way he has never done before. Human Nature will feature five original compositions and Herb's signature reimagining of classics like Michael Jackson's Human Nature, Burt Bacharach's Alfie, and Don't Go Breaking My Heart, and Back Rack and Elvis Costello's Look Up Again. It's both a pleasure and an honor to welcome Mr. Herb Alpert. Herb, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hey, Kevin. Gee whiz. I mean, I hope I can live up to that introduction.
Well, I figure you're just getting out, rolling out of bed, so it'd be a nice way to start the day.
Did my wife write that?
How is Lanny? Tell her I said hello, will you please?
Lanny, she's great. You know, she's from Chicago.
Sure.
Kimball and Lawrence at her district. She went to Von Steuben. And,
right.
You know, we come back all the time, and she shows me all the sites that used to be.
Well, you know, we had the pleasure of having her on the show here a while back, and we were talking about her book and so forth, and I know she's bringing you back. You're like an honorary Chicago. You've been coming back so often.
You know, I honestly do love the city. I think architecturally, it's the most beautiful city in the United States. It's extraordinary.
Well, you like it when the weather's warm, not when the weather's cold.
Oh, absolutely. I've been there when it's cold. One day, I was going out to get a pizza. I walked three steps out the door and walked right back in. Yeah, I'm from the West Coast. I'm from sunny California.
Well, it's nice. It's nice here now. It's going to be great when you come in October. We have great fall weather. Everybody's looking forward to it, and to have you and Lanny doing what you're doing, it's just very exciting.
Oh, I'm totally excited. You know, I have these nine sculptures at the Field Museum in Chicago. I don't know whether anybody made you aware of that one, but it's there's eight right in front as you walk into the Field Museum.
Right.
I've been sculpting for over 35 years. These are large totems in bronze, and it's been an honor to be there. It's going to be there for another year until next September.
Well, everybody's enjoying that, and I think the last time you were on the show, we had just introduced them to Chicago. They just come to the Field Museum, and interesting. Talk a little bit about that. Totems are something generic to the Pacific Northwest and Canada, of course. It was a way for, I guess, the indigenous people to communicate culturally about their lives and their excursions and what they did and the good and the bad things. How did you get involved with, or how did you get interested in totems and so forth?
Well, actually, I was struck by the, in Stanley Park in Vancouver, B.C., mm-hmm. there's a sculpture exhibit of the wooden totems, and as you say, they were done mainly by the native people of that area, but I got excited about that. I started doing totems that were kind of symbolic and kind of like similar to what they were doing, not quite, and all of a sudden I said, well, who wants to see that? They've already done that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start riffing on it, a little jazz version of
mm-hmm.
it. And I just go for feeling and motion, and I don't know, you know, to me, this might sound a little odd, but I think these totems, even though they weren't done by the Native Americans in the United States, it's kind of a reminder that, you know, we took advantage of all the treaties that we broke, and I think when you see those totems, it kind of reminds you of that, at least it does to me. Because I have a whole exhibit that I did called Blood Totems, and it's you know, it's on the darker side of life, but it's the reality of you know, we did take advantage of them, and this is my little way of saying hello.
Well, it's interesting because I'm always of the opinion that we are who we are because we stand upon the shoulders of those who have come before us, and we learn from that. And who's to say that, you know, intellectually or philosophically or emotionally or spiritually, what you're doing isn't that extension of what was started many years ago by these tribes up in the Pacific Northwest?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, I was doing the sizzle reel for the sculptures, and I was being interviewed, and I said something that it just came out of my mouth, and I was thinking that, wow, that's pretty profound. You know, in music, there's 12 notes that we use in the Western, you know, lexicon. There's just 12 notes that we all use. Mozart had those 12 notes, and Thelonious Monk had those same 12 notes. And look at the difference between what can be done with, the ingenuity of the human brain.
Sure, sure. You know, of late, there's been some documentaries and movies about Chet Baker and Miles Davis and so forth. Were you influenced by their work, Herb, when you were starting out?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was influenced by, I used to go see Chet Baker and Jerry Mulligan in this mm-hmm. place called The Hague. It was the Jerry Mulligan Quartet. I was in high school at the time, and I just was mesmerized by the sound because they were playing at this place, and Jerry Mulligan kind of backed into it because it was a very small stage, and they didn't have room for a piano. So it was the pianoless quartet. And I would go there several nights and just watch them. And they were, you know, I think in that period they were both a little under the weather in terms of what influenced by. And then Jerry would get up to the microphone when it was time for a break, and he'd say, "Shortly." I always loved that. But anyway, Jerry Mulligan was a dear friend of mine. After, you know, A&M Records, he did several recordings for us, and he was just an amazing talent. You know, I mean, Chet had his problems. He was a lovely guy. Last time I saw him, he came. I spent some time with him at the office, and he was kind of down on his luck again, as usual. And I gave him a trumpet that I had. I had this trumpet that he liked to use. It was a Martin Committee trumpet. And gave it to him, and, you know, the story goes 2 days later he pawned it, and he was, you know, up to the races on a dark side.
Yeah.
But he was a very good guy that had a, you know, a serious problem.
And Miles Davis, I always, he came to Chicago and was at the Symphony Center for a concert in his later years and just before he passed away. And I wanted to go see him, Herb, you know, and I didn't. And I always regret that, not having been able to see him in person.
Well, Miles was genius. I mean, he was really special. I think he was the seminal jazz musician. I think he really, really understood the art form. He was always pushing it. He was always surrounding himself with, you know, great young musicians. I mean, there's endless stories about Miles, but the one story that sticks out for me, this sax player was a young player, was playing with him, and he played a solo that he thought was really good, and Miles walked up to him and says, "You know the notes you're playing?" The guy says, "Yeah." He says, "Play the other ones." Yeah, no, Miles was special. You know, he was unique. He was always looking for, you know, something interesting to do.
You know, I enjoyed listening to your new album, Come Fly With Me. And we have some great standards on his Come Fly With Me, Blue Skies. Got a lot of living to do. It's terrific. Take the A-Train. And, of course, I'm sure in tribute to Chicago, the one entitled Windy City, right?
And exactly. You know, when I play songs that are familiar with people, I try to do them in a way that they haven't been done quite that way before. So it gives them another look at the melodies. And I mean, melody, it's all about melodies for me. You know, I was totally stuck on Alfie. I couldn't get Alfie.
Oh, that's terrific. What you got?
You know, 20 years. And I finally found a way to do it, and I kind of latched onto this sound that I was using on the horn. And I remember I called Bert, who's a friend of mine, Bert Bacharach, and I sent it to him. I sent the demo that I was doing. I said, "What do you think of this? Does this feel good to you?" And he just loved it. So you know, I pursued it, and it, you know, it's on the Human Nature CD.
I listened to that in the car on the way over, and I have to tell you, it is. And I'm going to compare it to a Miles Davis in that, you know, you listen to Miles Davis, and his songs are 40 minutes long. He plays and plays and plays and plays. And I listened to Alfie, and it's a three and a half minutes, something like that. And I wanted it to be longer, Herb. I wish it would go on for another 10 minutes because the way you've kind of the rendition you have here, it's just different, but you still remember listening to Alfie by Burt Bacharach and Hal Davis for the first time and just really enjoy it. You really get into it, you know.
I think it's one of their most beautiful songs. I mean, the lyric is extraordinary, and towards the end, obviously, my wife is singing it. But we're going to do that in concert, so if people want to hear maybe extended version, I'm not sure. Maybe we'll do that.
You know, the interesting thing about what you do both artistically and musically is, and I think this goes with any kind of artist. I saw a movie the other day with my wife called Genius, and it was about Thomas Wolfe and his editor at Scribner, Maxwell Perkins. And when he wrote his books, of course, they were very, very long books, 1,000 pages and so forth. And then Maxwell Perkins had a kind of cut them down a little shorter so people would buy them. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't be interested. But what makes somebody like Herb Alpert's music, or what makes somebody like Lonnie Hall's music, or what makes somebody like your art or sculpture, and something that moves them within themselves? That's an interesting concept philosophically, I think.
Well, yeah, you know, if you want to take that a step further, the thing that I am enamored with is the idea of what makes something interesting to listen to, what makes a sculpture interesting to look at, or a painting, or a dance. You cannot put it into words. You know, it's in that other level. It's in that you either feel it or you don't. And I think people don't listen with their ears. I think they listen with their soul. They listen, you know, if you stand in front of a Jackson Pollock painting and you try to make sense out of it, if you're not a fan of Jackson Pollock, you're going to try to analyze it and come up with why he did it, what kind of paint is it, it's going, you know, it's leaking, and say, I could do that, whatever it is, you're going to miss it. But if you just listen and feel it, and it's another way of approaching art. I don't think you can use your brain for art. I think it's that other dimension, and what makes something interesting to listen to. You know, my music, I stop when I get that feeling of, that's it, stop. Don't try to refine it. This is what happened, you know, in the 60s. We used to go in the studio with musicians and, you know, have a good time. We'd spin off of each other's ideas, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, now with the zeros and ones and the technology, I did an album a few years back called Rewhip. We did... we took the Whipped Cream and Other Delights album, and this producer had an idea. Why don't you take these great young mixers around the country, let them mix each individual track, and see what happens. Anyways, we did that. They sent me a music file, and I put a trumpet on this file, and I would send these mixers just my trumpet, because it's time-coded. All you need is that. You send the trumpet, they can put it right back into their mix, and they mix the record and the blah, blah, blah. And here's the point. They could have been in Afghanistan. I never saw these guys, and I made an album called Rewhipped. I mean, and it's a really good album.
Now, do you ever look back at some of the work that you did and listen to it now and say, you know, I could tweak that a little bit and make that a little different? Or are you satisfied with what was done?
For the most part, I'm really satisfied. I always you know, put my good housekeeping seal of approval on everything I put out, because, you know, I don't think of myself as, like, the greatest trumpet player in the world, but I have my own sound. I have my own voice.
Sure.
And I think that's what all artists are looking for. You have to find your particular way to do it. I spent a lot of years, you know, trying to play like Louis Armstrong, Harry James, Miles, Clifford Brown, all the great players. And I said, well, who wants to hear that? I mean, they've already done it. So I was looking for my own voice, and obviously the timing plays a big part in it. So when we had the Lonely Bull record you mentioned earlier, that was the record that started A&M Records in 1962. And that record was, you know, a top 10 record. I got a letter from a lady in Germany thanking me for that Lonely Bull record. She said, that record took me on a vicarious trip to Tijuana. And, you know, I kind of chuckled when I saw it, and I said, wow, that music was so visual for her, it transported her. And I said, That's the type of music I want to make, you know, the music that takes you someplace.
And your sound is so unique. You know Burt Bacharach's sound. You know the Beach Boys sound. You know the Beatles sound. You know the Rolling Stones sound. You have that unique sound. You know, you talked about Whipped Cream and Other Delights. I wasn't aware that there was music on that album, because I never got past the cover. But
hey, let me tell you a story about the cover.
Great cover, by the way. One of the great covers.
Well, you want to hear a great story about the cover. Kevin, I am not making this up. This happened, man. 3 months after that record was released, this guy comes up to me. He says, Mr. Alpert, you know that Whipped Cream cover? I said, yeah. What about it? He says, man, that's the best. I just love it. I said, thank you so much. What about the album? He says, well, I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet. I mean, I'm telling you, that happened.
You know, I had the opportunity a couple weeks ago of having one of the greats, you know, much like yourself, Jimmy Webb, on the show. And we were talking about some of the songs that he did. And he did it with, I guess, the Wrecking Crew. Is that was a group of top artists in Los Angeles that played with a lot of people?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, the Wrecking Crew played on lots of my records, including the Whipped Cream and Other Delights album.
So you would go into the studio and have a whole group. And how long would it take you to put together an album? You don't sit down and do it all at once.
Well, it depends. You know, when you're really rolling and things are happening and, you know, your energy is there, it didn't take that long for me. Maybe 2 months from start to finish. It was a whole different time, you know. It was a whole different way of making music. I remember I went in the studio with a group of musicians to record a work song. And in 20 minutes, I had it. It was done. It
really?
Was complete. You know, it was finished, and I let the guys go, and they said, wait, we got, you know, 3.5 more hours. I said, okay, have a good time, you know. We're finished. I stop when something touches me. It doesn't have to be perfect. Doesn't have to be perfectly in tune or whatever it is. I'm not looking for that. And I learned that years back. You know, I had the great privilege of watching and working with Sam Cooke. And he was telling me, he says, Herb, he says, people are just listening to a cold piece of wax. And it either makes it or it don't.
And that's the truth, yeah.
And that's the way I kind of approach it. When I hear something that touches me, I stop. I don't try to, over-sanitize it.
You know, I was educated by the Jesuits, and they always ingrained in us service to others. And, of course, you remember the great quote, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. And I know you're too modest to talk about this, but I'd certainly like to touch upon what you and Lonnie have done for the Los Angeles City Colleges and the school you have in New York and so forth. Talk a little bit about that, Herb.
Well, you know, this last donation that happened about a week and a half ago to Los Angeles City College, community college. Most people don't donate to city colleges.
Yeah.
It's not sexy. You know, they want to go to Yale or Harvard,
right,
or UCLA,
right,
or the any of the big universities.
Right.
But these are the ones. I'm telling you, Kevin, I got more emails and letters from people that appreciated that donation because it touches the average person. It
right.
touches the kids that are financially challenged, don't have the funds to be able to go to an SC or UCLA, and even touches the kids that don't have the grades, even if they had the funds.
Right.
If they could get into this college, we're paying their tuition, they're paying, for music lessons, et cetera, and it just really touched a nerve. And what I was hoping to do, and I hope to still, you know, kind of be on the soapbox for it, I'd like to see more people think about, you know, donating to community colleges where it really touches the average person and the average kid. And it's a small way of, trying to even that playing field a bit because a lot of these kids, you know, they come from just horrendous backgrounds. And it's tough to get beyond it sometimes. And they need a little encouragement. And it gives me pleasure to be able to do that. And it's a win-win.
Well, certainly well said, because in Los Angeles has a great community college system, as does New York, as does Chicago. And I think it's true. Kids that aren't able to get into the large universities, this is a way for them to get, if for no other reason, get the habit of good academics without the pressure that they have about going away and trying to compete and so forth. And all they need is to build somewhat of a foundation, and you're allowing them to do that. And then they can go on to a four-year university. But it's so very important because four-year universities are not for all the kids. They're just not.
That's absolutely right. You know, and it's learning is about discipline. You know, you want to play a trumpet? Yeah, sure. Okay, now put in the time, and you'll
right.
see what happens. You can't just think about it. You have to do it. And I think some of these kids don't have that chip yet. And when they get into a community college, and maybe it's just a wee bit easier at times than it would be at a Harvard, Yale, or UCLA, they get in the groove of doing it day after day and seeing the results of that.
It can instill that confidence, and I think that's what's the problem with some of the schools. You know, we accentuate athletics, and nothing wrong with that. But let's accentuate the culture and arts side of things, because that develops a foundation for young people that they're going to take on throughout their life. You know, you can't play athletics. You know, you can exercise and work out and stuff like that. But music and art and theater, that's going to stay with them forever. And I think it's a responsibility we as adults and as grandparents and parents and teachers and professors that these kids have to learn what that is. If they're comfortable with that, then it's not alien to them, Herb. You know, it's something they're going to be able to, oh, geez, I like going to the theater. Let me try it again. Or I like going to a concert. Let me try it again. And it's something they'll always remember.
Yeah, I'll give an amen to that one. But, you know, I like to get down to kids in the really early stages,
yeah,
you know, having a creative experience. I think that should be a core part of every kid's education.
I agree with you.
To rub elbows with music, with dance, with poetry, with acting, whatever it happens to be that turns them on at an early age. And my foundation is very active in this area because, you know, when I was 8 years old, I had the great opportunity of being in this grammar school who had a music appreciation class.
Really?
We don't have that much anymore, even in, you know, private or public schools. I guess, you know, surely some of them do. But it's that experience that I had that led me to the trumpet, and it was an instrument that was speaking for me because I was super shy as a kid, and this trumpet was making the noise, and little by little I learned how to play it and took lessons, and that discipline spills over into the academics. So it's a big thing for kids to have that thing young when they're, you know, in that early stages of their life, so they can have that experience of to be able to experience their own uniqueness if they stay with it. And then if they can experience their own uniqueness, they might be able to appreciate someone else's uniqueness. And we certainly need more of that in this world.
Very good point. Good point. Three new albums, Herb Alpert's Human Nature, Herb Alpert's Come Fly With Me, and the reissuing of all the classic album covers, of course, Whipped Cream and Other Delights being on top of the list, and certainly something to look forward to. Herb Alpert's new album, Human Nature, finds the iconic musician delving into dance grooves and elements of electronic music in a way he has never done before. The new album, his fourth new release in just 3 years, is out September 30th and features five original compositions and Herb's signature reimagining of classics like Michael Jackson's Human Nature, Burt Bacharach's Elfie, Don't Go Breaking My Heart, and Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello's Look Up Again. I start each project with the same pursuit, looking for melodies that I enjoy playing. I found three songs by Burt Bacharach that I've always loved and a new ballad called Look Up Again. In addition, there are some new songs that I co-wrote with some of my favorite musicians, says Herb Alpert about Human Nature, his 42nd album. Herb's legendary career includes five decades of unprecedented breakthroughs as an artist, record executive, and philanthropist. In the past 3 years alone, he won his ninth Grammy for 2013 Stepping Out and received the National Medal of Arts from President Obama. Saturday, October 15th at 7:30, the Mackinac Arts Center in Glen Ellyn, Herb Alpert and Lanny Hall. Herb, always a pleasure to chat with you. I have to say, it's just always fun to have a conversation with you and spend a little time. I know you're busy running around. You got a nice tour coming up, and we're going to look forward to seeing you in Chicago here.
Oh, great. Me too, Kevin. And I'll tell you, two weeks ago, I was in the studio at Capitol Records recording, Are You Sitting?
Yeah.
A Christmas album.
Oh, I love it.
To be released in 2017 with full orchestra and choir, and it is great.
Well, if I'm still around, I'm going to expect you to come on the show and chat about it.
What do you mean, still around? If you're still above ground, you mean?
Yeah, that's what I mean. But it'll be something. That's great. So, see, it's hard to get in the mood, though, isn't it, in the middle of summer doing that?
Tell me about it. I know. We were having a heat spell.
Well, tell Lonnie I said hello, please, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the 15th at the Mackinac.
Great. Kevin, I enjoyed speaking with you. Thanks so much.
As I do. Thanks, Herb.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Herb Alpert, the iconic and great Herb Alpert, going to be at the Mackinac Arts Center on October 15th at 7:30 with his lovely wife, Lonnie Hall. And three new offerings by Herb, Human Nature, which features some terrific music, and one is Elfie. The way he plays Elfie is just, you have to get it because it's coming out September 30th and you'll really love it. Electronic music, and then Come Fly With Me, which is a rendition of some classics. Come Fly With Me, Got a Lot of Living to Do, Take the A-Train, Something, the Beatles Something he plays, and a song that my grandfather always used to sing to me, Irish classic Danny Boy. but done in Herb's inimitable way. And finally, the reissuing of 25 classic albums and their covers, including Whipped Cream and Other Delights, which is coming up also. So always a delight to chat with Herb. It's an honor to have him on the show. And we're going to end by playing a little bit of his music, and I think we'll play a little bit of that song, Alfie, from his new CD, Human Nature. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Paramount Theater President and CEO Tim Rader presents another exciting jam-packed schedule of major stars, live music acts, top comedians, and family performances guaranteed to keep the Paramount filled with capacity crowds year-round in 2016-2017. Announced in March is the Paramount's 2016-2017 Broadway musical series, including Mamma Mia, Disney's The Little Mermaid, Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street, and Jesus Christ Superstar. Paramount anticipates more than 30,000 subscribers will take advantage of Paramount's now familiar buy two, get two offer or four Broadway-caliber musicals for no more than $29.50 per show. Unveiling the balance of the Paramount's 2016-2017 schedule with big names including Priscilla Presley, Engelbert Humperdinck. Well, I'll let our special guest tell us all about the great things he's put together for this year. On the line with us right now is the businessman, entrepreneur, nationally recognized consultant and authority in the field of fine arts venues, having been involved with the Metropolis Performing Arts Center, Wheaton Grand Theater, Genesee Theater, and Highland Park Theater, one of the brightest stars in the world of performing arts and entertainment venues, and the executive director of the historic Paramount Theater, now presenting the iconic ABBA musical Mamma Mia and the 2016-2017 season at the Paramount Theater, our good pal, Mr. Tim Rader. Timmy, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thanks for having me back, Kevin. This is a lot of fun.
Always a pleasure. And on the heels of, let me get this right, 172 Jeff Award nominations.
Well, I think it was 173, but close. Yeah, it was pretty close. Yeah,
that's good. Hit it out of the park, another this year. You know, you ought to keep that Cordy around. I think he might know what he's doing.
Well, he keeps telling me he knows what he's doing. Every time I give him a suggestion, he reminds me of the number of Jeff nominations and awards that he's gotten over the years.
You know, rightfully so. I mean, he's a special guy. We always enjoy chatting with him on the show. And, you know, you and I go back a long time with Jim Jarvis, and you've heard this before. And I'm not blowing smoke here, but you've done remarkable things at the Paramount, Timmy.
Well, thank you. It's been a group effort. I wish I could take all the credit. And it really does feel like we've got all the momentum in the world right now with everything that's every year the subscription just keeps building and the shows we run them longer and it's just more and more and it doesn't look like there's any end in sight. You know, this year it looks like we might end up with over 35,000 subscribers, which would put us at the the third largest subscription base in the nation, which is just really, you know, 5 years ago, who could have thought?
Really?
Yeah.
Now behind who's one and two?
Well, Walnut Street Theater in Pennsylvania, they have the largest subscription base. And then Marriott here in Chicago has, you know, in Lincolnshire has they have almost 40,000 subscribers.
Wow.
Yeah, it's, you know, and then we're right there with them.
Geez, 40's not that far away from 35, babes.
That's right. That's right.
And that's right around the corner. And with the productions that you have, and as good as any Broadway-style show, as good as any show downtown, you put on the greatest productions.
Well, that's why I think people are responding so well, is because they are so good. The show, obviously, the quality is there. And then to be able to afford a ticket, be able to come out for $29.50 or less, that's, you know, as you mentioned, the most expensive ticket is $29.50 if you're a subscriber, and you can sit there front row on a Saturday night. It's really great theater for a really good value. And then our subscribers are our family. We take care of them. We want to make sure that, you know, they come back. We're trying to pick shows that they want to see, you know, and push, you know, the limits of normal subscription. It's it's a nice mix of shows. Sweeney Todd is very different than Little Mermaid. It's a lot of different types of musical theater.
And you know, not to be mundane, but you can park.
Right, and you can park relatively. You can park for free. Most people park for free on the street or just in an open lot at a bank lot or one of the parking decks. But yeah, it's the most you would pay for parking is $5. And a lot of people, about 10% of the people, actually valet their car because we've got this great valet company right in front of the theater. And you could also valet at the casino if you go to the casino before or after and make a night of it.
And what I like about it too, Tim, I think you care about that customer. You care about that subscriber. You have the new Broadway series premium guest experience. Tell the listeners about that a little bit.
Right. So we added this past year, we added this kind of it's an upgrade for subscribers only, that they could have a private lounge and open bar and appetizers and desserts at intermission for, I think it's $20 for upgrade, something like that. And it's just for our subscribers, and we're sold out. That sells out, you know, every performance for the most part. It's limited to 40, I think, people at the most, and it's just another upgrade that people can do if they want something just a little extra, a little special for their night at the theater.
And people take advantage of it because going to the theater is a special night out, and you've made it even more special by offering that.
It's something that, you know, it's not a moneymaker for us. It's just to allow for a greater experience for those that wanted it. I mean, we'd heard, you know, that this existed, something similar, other places, and we tried it to see if people responded to it and if they wanted it, and they do. They really do. They really enjoy it. It's become a part of their routine now.
Well, let's talk about the season, of course. Mamma Mia is playing right now, got great reviews and a great group of people that are, and it's a feel-good musical. It's been around a long time, but you've seen it once, you want to see it again.
This particular show, it ran on Broadway for 14 and a half years. And not only did it run on Broadway for that long, which is highly unusual, it ran in the largest theater. It ran in the Winter Garden. I mean, this is an extremely popular show that I think it's the eighth longest running show in Broadway history, maybe the third longest, no, the longest running jukebox musical. And it's a jukebox musical, as you know, because it takes the songs from a particular group ABBA in this case and puts them all together with a story to make a more cohesive show out of it. And it is, it's a huge show. It's a fun show that, you know, we're running for 8 weeks. We've never had a show run 8 weeks here before. The longest any show's ever run was six, and that's because of the popularity of it. It is just that much fun. It is, it's one of those shows that people are coming back over and over to see, and they can because the tickets are affordable.
When you're, when you see your audience standing up dancing, you know you've done something right.
Yeah. And it's, you know who I always ask whether the show is going to register or not is our valet company, because, you know, the owners of the valet company, they're here and they work with us. They're good, great people, and they hear it first when people are they're bringing their cars back to the patrons, and the, and so they hear about it, and they came to me right after the very first preview and said, Tim, you've got a smash hit on your hand. this one's going to be big. So,
well, that's great. That's great. And then in November, Engelbert Humperdinck comes. Well, he's a, that's an iconic performer.
Yeah, and he sells out every time he shows up here. He hasn't been here in a long time either, mm-hmm. which is nice. People have been asking for him to come back, and so he's going to be a lot of fun, and we expect that one to sell out again.
Under the Street Lamp, after Engelbert, of course, that's a protege of Jim Jarvis's. He kind of discovered him and put him on the map from the time he spent at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center.
Well, Jim likes to take credit for that particular thing. He tells me about it all the time. But I have to remind him that Michael Ingersoll, who put that group together, he was in I Love You, You're Perfect Now Change at the Metropolis, and I was the one that approved his absence to go to go and audition for the Jersey Boys. So I think that I actually touched Michael before he did, and I'm more directly responsible because he would have never been in the Jersey Boys if I would not have said, yeah, absolutely, this is an opportunity. You can miss these shows and go audition. And he missed some rehearsals, and then he missed some shows, and, you know, no problem. We put his understudy in, and then he got the job, and then it was just a huge career move for him. And then, you know, we've been friends, Michael and I, ever since.
Jarvis conveniently leaves that out.
Yeah, no, of course he does.
Yeah. Billy Gardell, of course, from Mike and Molly. I didn't realize he's a comedian, huh?
I think he started as a comedian and kind of worked his way into the TV business.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And a favorite of a lot of, I don't want to say senior citizen, but older people enjoy it, and younger people now are getting tuned into it. He's no longer on the show, but certainly his legacy lives on. Garrison Keillor.
That show is, we have that show back here every two or three years, and every single time he just packs them in. He's got such a loyal audience base that people just have this strong, affinity, affection, and he just, it's one of those types of shows, you know, that is a kind of a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And new people come each time, even though some of the diehards come every time. But, he's not on the show anymore, but he's still extremely popular.
Kind of a unique talent. Once you hear him, you kind of get addicted to it.
Yeah, and he's a quirky guy, too, so he's interesting to watch on stage.
Yeah, yeah. Back to Broadway, of course, Disney's Little Mermaid, which is going to be a great show for the holiday season. That's just that's going to be terrific.
It really is, and that particular production is at this point, with all of the pre-production done, all of the scenic design and the costumes and the puppetry, is going to be the biggest show, most expensive show, largest in every aspect of anything we've ever done. And it's also going to sell more tickets than we've ever sold any particular show. The pre-sales for that show are just through the roof, and it's going to be an exciting holidays here at the Paramount, that's for sure.
Well, you know, it's great, too, because it's something for the parents that take the kids to, no matter what age, to me.
Right.
I think that's so very important. And I had the opportunity of having, just before you and I chatted here, having Herb Alpert on the show.
Oh, wow.
And we were talking about theater and music and dance and young people being exposed to that. And that's our responsibility as adults, as parents, as teachers, and I'm being redundant, but nonetheless, to expose these kids to come to the theater. They're going to come and see The Little Mermaid, and it's something that's on their level they're going to enjoy. So it's not intimidating for them. It's something they're going to ask their parents afterwards, well, you know, let's go to the theater the next time. And that's going to develop that foundation from which they're going to be able to build, you know, future audiences.
That's absolutely right. I mean, there was – I had a neighbor who brought their son to see A Christmas Story this last year, another holiday show that we do. And they came up to me afterwards and said, you know, how they were talking at intermission and how he decided he wanted to go out for the school play. And that happens. I mean, you come and you see these kids on stage and you see these experiences. And that's how it worked for me. And when I got involved in theater, it was from standing at the back of a high school gym watching a show. And this whole different world was up there on this stage, and I'd never seen anything like it. It was magical and foreign and strange and exciting. And yeah, this particular show is going to be one of those shows where the parents and the grandparents, all of these subscribers, they decide to bring their entire family and make a real event out of it for the holidays. It is a way to introduce people and get them to have some sort of connection with the theater.
You know, it spans generations, and I'm sure you're too modest to think about this, but all the time you've spent in the theater, at the different theaters that you've presented and taken care of and built, especially now here at the Paramount, all the people you've touched with the productions you've put on, that's pretty remarkable. It really is.
Well, that's just about the nicest thing I'll probably hear for the
Well,
week.
It's true, Timmy. We should say thank you to Tim Rader and to Jim Cordy and to Jim Jarvis and the great staff you have. Thank you for bringing that to all of us to have this opportunity.
Well, thank you, Kevin, for always supporting theater and what we do and everything that everyone does. Without champions like you, it wouldn't be possible.
I appreciate what I appreciate that. And, of course, Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. That's the one that they're looking forward to. They've got their spidey senses up for that one. So I've got cousins that never go see theater, and that's the one show for some reason that they want to see. It's a very sophisticated, it's going to be somewhat... Well, you know the show. It's going to be Jim Cordy, and it's going to be gruesome. It's going to be dark and also a lot of fun. It's going to be great.
It's a classic, and you have to see it. If you haven't seen it, you have to see it because it's unique. You'd go, how can this be a musical? I can make this be fun. Oh, it's fun.
It's very darkly funny. Yeah.
And some performers, Malin Perreault and Ricky Lee Jones, great recording artists.
They're going to do a concert together, which is sometimes something that they do on rare occasion. And those particular artists are—they've never been here before, and they're going to draw a new crowd. And it's going to be very exciting. It's going to be a great show because I mean I've listened to Madeline Peru before, and she's got this just crazy Billie Holiday sound. Just a lot of. She's going to be if you like vocalists, she's one you absolutely should not miss. She's just got this beautiful voice, and Ricky Lee, she's just Ricky Lee. I mean, you never know what you're going to get, but it's always going to be amazing.
Sure. And Riverdance will be back for all us Irishmen?
Yep. And then they're going to own the theater for the week, and I think we've got 5 performances of those guys, and they sell every ticket. It's always a spectacular show, and we have had them back for at least a few years now, and so it's going to be Riverdance week that week, that's for sure.
One of the classics, of course, by Andrew Lloyd Webber, of his many classics, Jesus Christ Superstar. It's been around for a long time and still is mesmerizing, still draws a great audience because of the lyrics and the music and the story.
Yeah, I think someone told me that this was his favorite, his one that he created, Andrew Lloyd Webber, that this is the one that he enjoyed watching the most, which is interesting because this particular piece I know the least amount. I've never actually produced or been directly involved in a production of this particular show. So I'm excited about this one because it's going to be a little bit new for me. And the creative team on this show is there are a lot of new people on the creative team. So it's going to be an exciting production. And people are talking about it already in the community about how excited they are to see this show. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, somebody who's not new in the production is Tom Vendifredo. Boy, he's a talented guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he got 3 nominations
Holy
for
cats.
Music direction this last year. And he's, a young guy. He's 31 years old. He's just got the world in front of him right now.
Jeez, what's his background?
I don't know a whole lot of some of the particulars, but I know that when I first met him, he actually was a child in the production of Big the Musical.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was in Drury Lane's production that we transferred from Drury Lane to the Metropolis, and he was in that production as one of the children in the ensemble. And that's how I first met Tom, and then he went off to college eventually and majored in the music and I think music direction and just has been working ever since he graduated years ago and is one of the top music directors in the city. And he could be working on Broadway, no doubt, if he wanted to be, but he's chosen to make Paramount his home. Mm-hmm. And we're just so grateful that he's here.
Well, you can take credit for him too, Timmy.
Oh, I wish.
Piano Man, a tribute to Elton John and Billy Joel, who toured here a few years ago, or a couple times, actually. And that's going to be a lot of fun.
That show, those guys, they were here 3 or 4 years ago, and we actually put that show together. They each have their own individual show, mm-hmm. as far as a tribute to Elton John and one to Billy Joel. And then we said, have you ever thought about doing a kind of a Piano Man thing and doing the, you know, two together? And so we actually introduced them and put them together, and they had their inaugural concert here, I don't know, 3-4 years ago or something like that. And so we're having them back because it was so popular the first time they did it, and everyone responded so well. And so that show is going to be, you know, exactly what you would think it'd be, a lot of the hits and them singing them sometimes better than the original.
And this is interesting. This is very interesting. I was reading this. Two of the biggest voices in music history never had the opportunity to perform together live in concert. Now's your chance to experience what it had been like to see Frank Sinatra and Barbara Streisand on stage together. That's interesting.
Yeah, can you imagine that?
Yeah. Can't imagine.
Yep. And they put together a show that has been received well, and it's going to be a very unique night of music that you probably can't see any. Well, you never did see, and then this is the only way to experience those two particular genres right together.
You know, with all the high technology they have, it's amazing they never put a duets album together with Barbara Streisand and Frank Sinatra. It'd be a classic.
Yeah, you're right.
It?
I think that's something you should work on.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And of course, you have the classic Movie Mondays, which are always very popular.
Yeah, you know, the dollar movie for come out on a Monday, any Monday at 7 o'clock, and see Casablanca or whatever it may be, and Dirty Dancing, Jurassic Park, Pretty Woman, E.T. We have these movies, and it's just been a community builder. You know, the theater's beautiful. You got this huge screen, this great sound system, all for a buck. You can come see a classic movie and get some popcorn and have a soda or even a beer and watch a show. It's really been great to see how that. And we've had this. I think this is our fifth year going into our fifth year Classic Movie Mondays, and it just continues to pick up some traction. The holiday movies are extremely well attended, and it's just it's a nice thing to have a resource like this in downtown.
And isn't that what you do so well, and your staff does so well, Tim? You bring the community together, because that's what supports the Paramount Theater, and that's what's going to keep it strong for years to come. And you do that so well.
Well, thanks. I've never quite understood why theaters are often dark.
Yeah.
If there's just a way to do something that will keep the lights on. It doesn't have to make a lot of money, as long as it, you know, maybe it can pay for itself.
Sure, sure.
And that's what we try to do. We try to create some activity that can sustain and that will support the community.
Well, where do you go from here, Timmy?
Well, from here, I think I've got another staff meeting. But otherwise, you know, I'm not going anywhere. Although we do have some.
Well, that's good.
We have some cool things in the future we're going to be talking about. We've got a School of Performing Arts that's there's this old Waubonsie building, you know, right next to the theater. Waubonsie Community College has moved, and they've redeveloped a new building. And so their old building is, right now we're in discussions with the developer and the city, and there's a really good chance that in the coming days we're going to have a story there where we're talking about a new development that includes artist lofts and a School of Performing Arts and a restaurant and rehearsal spaces and all sorts of fun stuff. And that's really viable, and it's just around the corner.
Very cool. Very cool. And, of course, you had a great success with River Edge Park this past season. I talked to Jarvis early in the season about it, and you had a great turnout for everybody out there.
Yeah, the shows this summer were received really well. They were a lot of fun. I mean, Beach Boys sold out, Willie Nelson with Kris Kristofferson sold out, and we've had a lot of really just packed crowds there. And we're going to keep building on that, keep raising the marquee value for the acts that we bring, keep having some summer shows at River Edge Park. It's a lot of fun. A lot of people love those shows.
The Paramount Theater is the center for performing arts, entertainment, and arts education in Aurora, the second largest city in Illinois, named one of the Chicago's top 10 attended theaters by the League of Chicago Theaters. The 1,888-seat Paramount, located in downtown Aurora, 23 East Galena Boulevard, is nationally recognized for the quality and caliber of its presentations, superb acoustics, and historic beauty. Today, the Paramount self-produces its own Broadway musical series, presents an eclectic array of comedy, music, dance, and family shows, and on most Mondays screens a classic movie. The Paramount Theater continues to expand its artistic and institutional boundaries under the guidance of Tim Rader, President and CEO, Rorick Civic Center Authority, Jim Cordy, Artistic Director, Paramount Theater, a dedicated Board of Trustees, and a devoted staff of live theater and musical professionals. And on the line with us right now is the CEO of the Paramount Theater, a good pal, Tim Rader. Timmy, a phone number, website, if people would like to get some more information?
Yeah, we're at ParamountAurora.com, and the phone number is 630-896-6666.
Always a pleasure, my pal. I congratulate you on your great success. I know you will not rest easy until it's even greater, and offering all the things you do for the people in the western suburbs and people who come in from the city to see the great shows you have out there. Please continue. Anything we can do to get the word out, you know we're here for you. Our best to Mr. Jim Jarvis and Jim Cordy, and let's keep in touch.
That's great. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Okay, my pal.
Bye-bye.
Timmy Rader, the CEO of Paramount Theater, now presenting the iconic ABBA musical Mamma Mia and the 2016-2017 season at the Paramount Theater. For information, 630-896-6666. What a great time they're having out there, and great time they're allowing us to have to come out to the Paramount Theater. So if you get the opportunity, please do so. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guest, the iconic entertainer Herb Alpert, who will be appearing with his bride, Lanny Hall, in concert Saturday, October 15th at 7:30 at the Mackinich Arts Center in College of DuPage in Glen Ellen. For information, 630-942-4000. Always delight chatting with Herb, very personable man. He's got three new CDs out, Herb Alpert's Human Nature, which is kind of an electronic music album. Listen to Alfie, what a great rendition of it. Come Fly With Me with the title song and some tribute to Chicago with Windy City, Something by the Beatles, and Got a Lot of Living to Do. And finally, his reissue of all the classic album covers and albums over the last few years, including Whipped Cream and Other Delights. So if you get a chance, stop by and see Herb and Lonnie out at Mackinich Arts Center in College DuPage. And our good pal Tim Rader, who is the executive director of the Paramount Theater, now presenting the iconic ABBA musical Mamma Mia. And the Broadway series will continue with Disney's Little Mermaid, Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, and Jesus Christ Superstar. For information, 630-896-6666. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. As we say goodbye to summer, have a great weekend.
Try with every day to make it better as it grows. Any luck, then I suppose. The music.